You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow.
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if he told it.
Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way because you are listening to the movie show.
What is up?
Hey.
This is the movie show.
On your favorite ORSPS.
Active FM.
The movie show. The movie show.
There we go.
And this is Sash.
He's Ryan.
Ha! And you... Today we have got another exciting program for you.
Quentin Tarantino's third film, 1997. I was born in 1997.
Lots of facts.
Yeah, lots of facts.
And no new actors. No, there are some new actors.
There are new actors.
Yeah, we are on the Quentin Tarantino roadway, highway.
So remember last week we spoke about his first film was Reservoir Dogs. Samuel L. Jackson auditioned for Reservoir Dogs, didn't get it. But then when he did Pulp Fiction, he specifically wrote a role for Samuel L. Jackson. He did that again with this film. So the chick that acted as the main character, Jackie Brown, she auditioned for Pulp Fiction, but then didn't get the role. So when he did Jackie Brown, he specifically wrote the role for her.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Right?
Well, that's cool. That's cool. Quentin Tarantino. So, if I read you what is off, does that make sense? If I read for you. Yes. When I read this, it'll give a really perfect, for me, a explanation of this guy's movies. All right. You're Quentin Jeremo. Ooh, Tarantino is an American filmmaker and actor. Yes, his films are characterized by frequent references to popular culture and film genres, non-linear storylines, right. Dark humor, stylized definitely. Violence, definitely. Extended dialogue.
Definitely.
pervasive use of profanity.
Definitely.
Cameos.
Yes.
And ensemble costs. Other directional troops that identify his styles include the use of songs from the 1960s and 70s.
Very true.
Yes, and... Let me just tell you how his career started. Tarantino began his career as an independent filmmaker with the release of the crime film Reservoir Dogs in 1992. His second film, Pulp Fiction, in 1994, dark comedy crime thriller, was a major success with critics and audiences, winning numerous awards, including this name, which I will not announce, and the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay. In 1996, he appeared in From Dusk Till Dawn.
But that wasn't his film.
Yeah.
It wasn't directed by him. So it's not part of his 9 films.
Fact. So, Tarantino was born in March 27, 1963. So just work out quickly how much his age is, when his birthday is. Put in your calendar. There you go. In Knoxville, Tennessee.
Wow.
The only child of, you know, the father. Right?
He seems like an only child. He really is.
Totally.
Like, he gives off the only child vibes.
Totally. His dad, Tony Tarantino, who left the family before his birth even.
Sure.
Was actually an actor and director as well.
What?
How crazy is that? How crazy. Now.
That makes sense. That, cause Quentin Tarantino has such a wide range of knowledge when it comes to films.
He does.
But not just modern films. He goes like way back, like especially if you watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the character that Leonardo DiCaprio plays is basically the old film.
Yeah.
Era and industry. And Quentin Tarantino was able to give Leonardo DiCaprio a whole lot of old movies and old actors from like before the 1950s that were like the top, the best, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And he knew about it, which means that makes sense why he knew about it, because his dad obviously was into that era type of thing.
Through the 1980s, Tarantino had a number of jobs. After lying about his age, he worked as an usher at an adult movie theater in Toronto.
Go,
called the Pussycat Theater. He spent time as a recruiter in the aerospace industry.
Wow.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. And for 5 years, he worked at a video archives.
Yes,
the video store in
Manhattan
Beach, California.
That's where he got the Reservoir Dogs. Someone said, I don't want no Reservoir Dogs. And that's where his first film idea came from.
So there's just some few interesting facts that I picked off the Wikipedia page of him. But pretty cool.
So if you don't know, if this is your first movie show, we are basically doing a Quentin Tarantino marathon because he has only made 9 films and his first film came out in 1992. So it's not that Dennis, like, he could have made more films if he wanted to, but he decided that he's only going to make 10 films in total for his whole career. Yeah. Because the reason he said that is he basically said what happens is when people get older, like, their films just, like, go downhill and, like, quality goes downhill, and basically by the end of their career they're a total, like, stuff up. So for him he was like, I'm gonna make 10 good films and then I'm just gonna stop, and then those are gonna be my 10 good films. So that's basically his whole thinking behind it, and he's made 9 so far. Before this marathon, we had watched 3. So unintentionally, we had watched 3 of his films. Now we have watched 6 of his films. So we have 3 more to go. I know it's Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2. And, flip. I know it. I just can't remember it. Yeah, there's another one.
I'm still on Wikipedia page.
Okay, there we go.
Somewhere here, there's all the films. That big block with all the...
The films that he's, but now specifically this is films that he's directed. He's, Quentin Tarantino has been involved in a lot of films. He's either been, he acted in, Once Upon a Time in Mexico? No. There was a film that he acted in with Antonio Banderas.
Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Jackie Brown, Kill Bill 1 and 2, Death Proof, Inglourious.
Death Proof, I think it's that one.
Probably. 2007.
Then
Inglourious.
And then Django.
Yeah.
No, there's another one.
The Hateful Eight.
The Hateful Eight.
And then Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Hollywood. There we go. Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah. So this week we are looking at 7, 8, 9.
Did you know where the sh was? Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2.
Oh, did you make it one?
It's one film.
It is technically. It's one Volume film. 1 and 2. So,
come on.
Yeah. So this week we are doing Jackie Brown, which was released in 1997. This film, so it was his third film. Pulp Fiction was a huge hit. It brought in $219 million. This film, Jackie Brown, didn't do as well as Pulp Fiction. I think it only brought in $70 million. I mean, but obviously compared to like Pulp Fiction, it didn't do as well as Pulp Fiction did. But I must say it was different. It definitely was. In fact, there's a lot of, like, if you go on YouTube, there's a lot of videos that speak about why Jackie Brown is so different to all the other films that Quentin Tarantino has made. So like the first two films that came out, they were action packed. They were gory. They were just like quick. And do you understand what I'm saying? Not necessarily quick, because there were still long dialogue pieces. But with this one, this was more, it was more of like a heist film than anything, if you understand what I'm saying. Like it was slow paced actually.
Yeah.
Like the third act is when the heist actually happens. And that's when you're like, you know, in heist films, you always have that, oh my goodness, are they going to make it? Are they going to get out? Like that.
This is where they die, isn't it?
Oh, flip. And it was actually very stressful. Like that one shot of her walking out of the dressing room to, you don't know where she's walking to. And the camera just stays with her and you're just like, you're like, and she's panicking. She's like freaking out. And then she eventually goes to the cops. And Michael Keaton. How young was Michael? He was a young. I feel like Robert De Niro was always old.
For me to see Robert De Niro was, but.
But he was still old. I was expecting him to be young.
But in this role was very different.
Yeah.
Like he was apparently, just very like.
Him and Quentin Tarantino didn't get along, and I think it's also because he originally wanted the role of the bail bond. So Robert Foster got the role. Okay. Yes, he actually ended up winning an Oscar for that role. Yeah. But Quentin Tarantino wrote the role for Robert Foster. He actually wrote, when he wrote the script, that role was for him, and Robert De Niro wanted that role. But obviously Quentin was like, no, I've already written it for someone. So he then gave him the role of Samuel L. Jackson's friend that just got out of prison, but he didn't have a very big role. And I think they said that's why him and Quentin, there was,
just a
conflict.
Okay.
Because he really, Quentin didn't, I mean, Robert De Niro, and he was barely in, like, do you understand what I'm saying? Like, when you hear Robert De Niro, you're like, wow, you know, Robert De Niro is in the film. And he was barely in the film. Yeah, so.
That's what I was saying. I was surprised with his role because he was just very, like, just there.
I feel like the only reason his character, What? I suppose he helped Samuel L. Jackson to a degree. Samuel L. Jackson, apparently this is Samuel L. Jackson's favorite Quentin Tarantino film. Mm. Jackie Brown is Samuel L. Jackson's favorite. I was like,
well, sure? The character that he played was a lot more.
Yeah, I didn't like him. As much as I liked him in Pulp Fiction, I did not like him in this one. His character,
Yeah.
He wasn't smart in this one either.
No.
Pulp Fiction, there was this intelligence to his character. Yeah. Yeah, he was just like a dumb gangster.
Yeah.
That's basically what he was.
Yeah.
That like threatened people and Jackie was the more intelligent one out of the two. She, And it she was quite an interesting.
She was, because you were trying to sort of get her.
Yeah.
You were like, wait, what? Like, she just seemed like, okay, cool. Yeah. And then, yeah.
So Quentin Tarantino met Robert Foster in a restaurant and handed him the script, saying, "You're going to do this, and that's all there is to it." Foster was naturally thrilled, having a major career slump, and this was the first film that saw him come back in a big way, even landing him an Oscar nomination. I enjoyed his character. I think his character was my favorite character in the whole film. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed. He was just so calm and. Like, he didn't fit in a way. Like, he didn't fit in the story. Like, but he fits, if you understand. Yeah. I don't know how to explain it, but yeah, I really enjoyed. And then Pam Grier played Jackie Brown. And when she walked into audition for Quentin Tarantino, she said that there were posters of her from 20 years ago. And she actually said to Quentin Tarantino, "Did you just put these up because you knew I was coming over?" And his answer was, "No, I was going to take them all down because you were coming over." So he was a big fan of Pam.
Oh, wow.
So much so that he literally stayed. Now, remember, in Pulp Fiction, he'd worked with John Travolta. But he stated that Jackie Brown was the first time that he worked with like a major actress, which is impressive because it means he didn't consider John Travolta to be this major actor compared to her, because he said this film was the first time he worked with a major. And I mean, he'd worked with Bruce Willis. He'd worked with Quentin Tarantino.
Well, there's a lot of people saying that he's brought a lot of 70s actors who were sort of like just sort of their careers were just not really.
They were obviously big in the 70s, but then they took a slump after that.
And then he sort
of
pulled them back up again type of thing.
Which is, if you think about it, think about this, right? Leonardo DiCaprio's character in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was exactly that actor. And in the movie, what he did for Leonardo DiCaprio's character is he brought this dying out actor.
Western cowboy.
That was brilliant in his day, but now the new film era didn't have a spot for him, and he brought, which is kind of now what he's done.
He was on his way out.
Yeah. But you can see how that era really affected Quentin Tarantino by like the different things that he pulls into.
And in his words were, you know, it's not that he aims for these characters. He doesn't see them and say, "Oh, that's such a, oh, I want to pull this guy back." He just sort of writes a story for that actor. And because they act good, he said they don't even have to look hot. They just have to be a good actor. And then he pulls them in, and then pah, there you go. It's like, you know, it's another boost.
That's true, actually, because if you look in, okay, let's be honest here, people. Let's just be dead honest. Most films have good looking people in them. Like, looks is a factor. Obviously, there's character description, but let's think about this. Good looking people in a film, I think, help sell the film. So that's why like producers and directors will go for good looking people. But if you think about Quentin Tarantino, his film often has weird looking people in his film. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, you look at them and you're like, okay, but it's obviously because that's his style. His style isn't the good looking person. It's more, he is looking at the acting. And honestly, for me, one of Brad Pitt's best performances is in a Quentin Tarantino film. And one of Leonardo DiCaprio's best performances is in a Quentin Tarantino film for me. So like, I think he knows how to get the most out of the actor as an actor.
Yeah.
He's not just, do you understand what I'm saying? He really pulls the performance out of them, which I think it's one of the reasons I thoroughly enjoy his films. Even if you look at like Samuel L. Jackson, like he pulls out acting out of, like you have Nick Fury, right? And then you have Samuel L. Jackson in a Quentin Tarantino film. Yeah, and it's like,
it's not even the same person.
Yes. It's and he's different. Been in a lot. He was in Django.
Yeah.
He was obviously in Pulp Fiction. Mm. He was in, Jackie Brown.
And do you remember what he was like in the Django? Was it the Django?
He was the he slave. Was like, he was Leonardo DiCaprio's like head slave.
Like
really
old guy.
With that accent.
He was like, what is this guy doing on a horse?
Yes. He was like, what the hell? Yeah, shame. So this film, from a gore perspective, it's not as bloody as, especially Reservoir Dogs. Remember that dude's lying in his own blood. In fact, for most of the film, that undercover cop is bleeding. Like, he's lying in his own blood, like dying out. But in this film, so apparently people complained about how bloody and gory Quentin's first two films were. So we actually toned it like a lot down. In fact, you don't see blood in this film because, spoiler alert, when the blonde chick gets, that chick was insane. She was just like high.
I was trying to get her. I was like, what is she doing?
No, she was, okay, yeah. When she died, I was like, you had it coming though. Like, you really, like, if you're really gonna taunt Robert De Niro like that, like, what do you think's gonna happen?
Yeah.
But when he shot her twice, you don't see her. She goes out of the frame. Mm. Also, in the beginning, when, Samuel L. Jackson shoots that dude in his boot, you don't see anything. And then,
it's like this long shot.
Yes. When Robert De Niro, spoiler alert, dies, you don't see anything. And when Samuel L. Jackson, spoiler alert, dies, you do see him, his dead body, but it's not gory in any way. Yeah. And then also, this is a Quentin Tarantino trait, is he'll have a corpse POV. So what that is once someone's died in his film, he'll put the camera where the dead person should be and have the actors look at the camera. So it's a POV, but it's literally a corpse POV. I even remember Brad Pitt, his corpse POV in Inglourious, that movie. I don't know if you remember that. Beep. Right at the end of the movie, there's that corpse POV that takes place. So that is a thing that he does.
It's quite an interesting shot, actually, because usually when you do a POV, you're putting the audience in that person's...
Yes, shoes.
Basically.
So now you're putting the audience in the dead person's shoes.
So if you're dead, it means...
Killing the audience.
It means you're watching what somebody thought about you. Like how they just... we just killed him like a dog, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, well, shame, you know, type of thing. It's quite...
Yeah. So, in the first mall scene where you see Max Cherry, who's played by Robert Foster, he's seen exiting a movie theater while the music for the ending credits is playing. So you can hear the end credits playing. That music is the closing music for the film itself.
Wow.
How cool is that?
That's quite something,
I know, right? Yeah. And then also Quentin Tarantino compares this film to Rio Bravo, which came out in 1959. You see what I'm saying? Like, who's watched a movie from 1959? Quentin Tarantino. And he will use
how
it
well
in his
known
film.
Was that? How well known was that film anyway?
Probably. I feel like I've heard that name before. I haven't watched the film, but he said it's a hangout movie. That's how he explains it. He says Jackie Brown is better the second time. And I think it's even better the third and the fourth time. Maybe even the first time we see it, we go, why are we all doing this hanging out? Why can't we get more of the plot? But now the second time you see it and the third time you see it, you're not thinking about the plot anymore, obviously, because you know what's going to happen. You're waiting for the hangout scenes.
Yeah.
To me, that's the thing that Rio Bravo 1959 did. I remember the first time I saw Rio Bravo, I remember more the 15th time I saw Rio Bravo. So he did what you did with Tenant, except you didn't get that far, did you? Yeah. So he says it's about hanging out with the characters, which if you think about it, that is a brilliant depiction or description of this film.
And he's actually a good director to do that because of the long dialogue.
Yes,
scenes.
And the interesting dialogue. Because you literally do feel like where most films are like plot heavy.
They'll talk about... where the film is leading.
Yes.
Instead of talking about something in the person's life, you know. Hey man, didn't your mother say that she don't know that thing? Dude, that was my mother. That was John. Wait, what happened to James?
Yeah, like you're literally watching these
James
two characters hanging out.
Yeah. I don't know. We should give him a call later. Don't forget. Okay, write a note.
And then later you'll get the call on the end of the film. Yeah. Hello? This is John.
Where's that pink? No, we left it in the dude that we shot, you know.
So that's true. Because also I felt like the action really only happened in the third act because that was when the heist happened. Mm. Whereas before that, it was kind of like, It was just you were watching the characters having you were watching the characters hanging out. So that's a perfect description.
And the conversation adds onto the character. So he's using those conversations just not as meaningless. He's using it as a character sort of build description. Mm. You know, you can hear what they're talking about and you're like, oh, this is that kind of guy. So,
this is also Quentin Tarantino's first and only film as of 2022 to be adapted from pre-existing material. So there was actually a novel, that's where the story originates from. And then he took it and he adapted it. The difference between, the novel and the movie was it was still a woman that was the main character, but she was white in the novel. And he changed that to obviously being an African American. And the reason he did that was because he wanted Pam to play the role. That's literally why he did it. There wasn't any other reason. He just wanted her as the actress. So he then adapted that. But otherwise, all of his other films are his own material creation. Yeah. And then it was Samuel L. Jackson's idea to give his character the long hair and the braided goatee.
Yeah, that was quite something, eh?
I was pretty sure when he was talking because, like, the hair, the way
that... It would also go long, yeah. I know
when he's talking to that guy in the beginning and he's like, yo, come help me out, man. I just bailed you out of prison. What's wrong with you? Like, you know when it distracts you? Like, you're actually, like, it keeps drawing your eye to this piece of hair that was, like, fluttering about as Samuel L. Jackson speaks. So that was quite funny. He was weird in this film. Yeah. And then Quentin Tarantino was actually upset that Pam didn't receive an Oscar nomination for Best Actress. And she was very good, I must say. I actually did enjoy her. Like, I thoroughly enjoyed her. Yeah. The white 1980 Honda Civic, which Jackie drives.
Here we go.
Is the same car Butch, Bruce Willis, was driving when he knocked down Marcellus Wallace in Pulp Fiction 1994. Given how badly Butch crashed after knocking down Marcellus, it's nothing short of amazing that the car wasn't a write-off. This is insane. So the car they crashed, the car Bruce Willis crashed in Pulp Fiction is the same car that Pam Grier drives in Jackie Brown.
Just think about that.
But also another Quentin Tarantino thing. Like, this is also like a... What do they call it? Like, you know he does the corpse POV. Mm. Another thing he often does...
Is it a trait?
Yes, trait. Yeah. Is, you know, the driver's seat shot. So you have the character driving and it's the side. That's like you're sitting in the passenger seat with the camera. Like I remember Brad Pitt shots of that. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Obviously in Reservoir Dogs when the cop is screaming his lungs out and then they move forward to, I think his name was Harvey White or something. There's that shot there. Mm. Pulp Fiction, I'm sure they had it in Pulp Fiction.
I think
Bruce Willis.
They had the side. But you see, I don't know if you still call it a Quentin Tarantino trait where it was now the both of them from a side shot like this.
Oh yeah. Yes. Okay. There we go.
I remember that.
So that's also
another
trait of his. And then also another trait of Quentin Tarantino is dark humor. So in the scene where, Robert De Niro kills the blonde surfer chick. So she's actually taunting him. I'm not even going to say mocking or teasing. Like she was taunting him. Like, where is it, huh? Where, like the way she was doing that. He then shoots her, I think in the chest and in the neck or some head or something like that. Then he continues walking and eventually finds his car. And then he still turns around and says, see, I told you it was over here. But now he's saying that to her who he just shot. So like that's how he brought in dark humor there where he's acting as if nothing happened. Meantime, he just shot the chick twice. So that's also another trait of Quentin Tarantino.
And then also Jackie Brown's like... No, I found the car, whatever, with everything in it. And then can't think of the guy's name now.
Robert Foster.
Yeah. He was like, she said, what, haven't you ever borrowed anyone's car before? And he's like, not someone who's dead.
Yes. Shame. And then Quentin Tarantino wanted, basically he wanted to see the audience's reaction to key moments in the film. So he spent, this is insane, he spent the first several weeks following the film's release, watching it in theaters. He says, I saw the movie like, as in he watched his own movie, like 13 times at the Magic Johnson Theater. The whole first 4 weeks, it was there. I just lived there.
I think that's very healthy as a director.
How cool is that though? Like, imagine you go to watch Quentin Tarantino's latest film, and there's Quentin Tarantino. Or you sit there, you're like, wait a minute, that'd be so cool. That would just be amazing.
And like I said, I don't know if you've noticed, but Tarantino has this like his chin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's not like you can notice him. Yeah. But I think that's really cool as a director.
Yeah, I think it is.
I think that really changes the way that you write your next pieces.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can see how Quentin's next films really are affected by the previous film. First of all, because like often he'll cast an actor that didn't make his previous film in his next film.
Yeah.
So he did that with Samuel L. Jackson. He did that with Pam Grier. Like he'll often do that. And then also I like how he'll even, so I don't know if you remember in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Sharon Tate's character, the Margot Robbie who played Sharon Tate, she ended up going to watch herself. Do you remember when she goes to the cinema and then watches herself?
Yeah.
Which is cool because it's almost like a nod to Quentin Tarantino. I don't know if Sharon Tate did that. And I remember, an interview with Leonardo DiCaprio, Brad Pitt and Margot Robbie where the interviewer said to them, would you ever go and watch your movie in theater? And I think all of them said no, they wouldn't. They actually said they wouldn't go do that.
Sure.
So the fact that Quentin Tarantino does that and then also that he portrayed Sharon Tate doing that, I don't know if she actually did that based on how those three actors responded to the question. She might have, I'm not sure.
That's very interesting.
But yeah, I feel like he nods to himself.
That's very, very interesting that you say that. Sure.
Which is pretty cool.
Are there any actors out there? Would you go watch a film of yourself? Why not?
I feel like audiences respond. I think it's nice to see how the audience responds. But I feel like also they mustn't know you there, you know?
Well, I wonder if it's a thing. Yeah, look, I think from that perspective, it can either be from a perspective of, no, you know, I don't want to go out there. People are going to, you know, you're going to have one of those nights. Could get crazy.
Yeah.
Or it could be a thing of, you know, I'm just scared that the way that I did a specific part, I might just, you know, cringe or something like that. That's quite, but I mean, you're an actor. You're acting out something specific.
Yeah. And it can help you with your,
and I'm sure actors do it in front of the mirror, don't they?
Yeah.
Don't they often like they sit there, they see if they're pulling out the right faces. They
look, I suppose actors do see how audiences react because at film premieres and all film festivals, they obviously watch with an audience that hasn't seen the film. So for example, like Elvis, when they went to, the Cannes Film Festival, which is where that was Austin Butler's first time watching the film. Other cast members had watched it. He said he was super nervous because Priscilla Presley and Lisa Marie were there. And for him, he was like super nervous for them to see it just because of their relationship with Elvis. And, you know, the film is kind of a tribute to them in a way. But they received, I think, a 14-minute standing ovation.
Yeah.
So like, and I mean, that would be people who haven't watched the film. So obviously at like film premieres, the actors would get, but then like the audience knows the actors are in the crowd. And do you understand what I'm saying? Like it's not like a real raw reaction. Like, if you know Brad Pitt's in the cinema, you know, you're like, oh my goodness, mommy. You know, it like changes the whole experience for you. Whereas if you're just watching the movie, and then react to the film.
See, that's probably why Quentin Tarantino probably does it.
Yeah, he goes to like just a normal.
Because it's a big show, the premiere.
Yes.
Big show. Yes. Cameras. Everyone's there. You got to come out and be like, "What a great film! I'm
so job.
Privileged to be directed."
Then
by
the
this
next
guy.
Day, the next day in the like reviews, Quentin Tarantino's worst film, and he's like, "But everyone loved it at the premiere last night. What's wrong with you?" Yeah. So this also is the lowest body count in a Quentin Tarantino film. Only four people died. So of any of Quentin Tarantino's films.
You know, the next couple of films that go, you guys wild again.
Although Kill Bill Volume 2 only has 3 on-screen deaths. However, it has several characters killed during a flashback scene. So that's why it tops Jackie Brown in, but this was more of a calm, I think this possibly could be Quentin Tarantino's calmest film, if I could put it like that.
Yeah.
Cause it was more,
maybe just put it out there, just said, film. Hey, you happy? Are you happy now? Okay. Can we
get
on
back to the blood and the gore? And then Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I remember the first time I watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I was thoroughly enjoying the film. And then I didn't understand, I didn't get the whole Sharon Tate thing. I didn't know. So I didn't know what the film was about. Next thing that the end scene happens, I remember sitting in the lounge. I think my dad was with me, and I remember I was just like, what happened? I don't understand what happened. And I remember looking at him and thinking like, why? But now I understand. Now, you know, you get it. You're like, but at first it was very traumatizing.
I'll never forget Brad Pitt's face. No, he's just like, well, hello there. He's just like standing there. Oh, okay. He's like, whoa.
Yeah, no, it was a bit intense.
Good
man.
Film.
Yeah.
Yeah. This, after when the action starts and the blood comes out, yeah, then you're just like, ooh.
So we have to ask this question, right? Okay, before we ask the question, so just to mention, it's a Quentin Tarantino film. The language is horrible. Yeah, the language really is horrible. The amount of times that I think this is the most that Samuel, you know, the phrase mother, and then you put the F word there. Samuel L. Jackson, I think this is the most he said that in a film ever.
I would imagine so.
Jackie Brown is the most he said that phrase. So the swearing is horrible.
Yeah.
And then also there is a sex scene between Robert De Niro and that's actually, her name's Fonda.
Can't remember.
The blonde chick. Now apparently this is gross, but apparently, so he obviously had sex with her on, you don't see anything. They don't show you, but you don't see any body parts. Let me put it like
it's
that.
Just like,
but quink. Yeah, it's like, okay, cool. But apparently, so he had sex with her in this film, and then in another film, he had sex with her aunt. So he's the only person to have slept with an aunt and a niece in film history. Like, okay, cool.
Moving right along.
So, we've watched 6 out of Quentin Tarantino's 9. Yeah. Ryan, you have to, okay, obviously take language out of it. Which was your favorite so far?
Pulp Fiction.
Really?
Yeah.
Out of the newer ones?
Yeah. Well, look, I watched Kill Bill a long time ago.
Okay, I haven't watched Kill Bill.
I actually don't think that there's that much language in the film. But I could be completely wrong.
Okay. But I watched it when Kill Bill next?
But I watched it when I was like really young. And when I was really young, we were very, you know, about movies with language. So I don't think so.
Oh, because you wouldn't have watched it otherwise.
But I could be complete. Some people watching this right now, they're like, oh, you have no idea. Oh, he's got something else coming. But, and it was okay. It was all right. Kill Bill's like, yeah, okay. But for me, so far,
even so, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
I'm thinking about that.
Inglorious Men, Born Out.
Definitely Pulp Fiction, just because of the plot, and there's just like a glue that holds you, that keeps your eyes to screen in that film. Yeah, the conversation, the way that it rolled out, the humor in it, like all of it, it's just super entertaining, like really, really entertaining. And at the end, when the whole ending happens and Samuel L. Jackson's character, like, he walks away from the whole thing. And on top of that, the depth where you know what's going to happen next, but it hasn't happened yet. And then, like, the two couple walk out, Honey Bunny?
What was her name? Pumpkin.
Yeah, and, like, you see how much depth there is to the different characters and the lightness of it. And you're just like, what a beautiful, it's lovely.
I agree with the first act and the third act. The second act of Pulp Fiction honestly traumatized me. I was just like, what am I watching? What is happening? So for me personally, when I watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the ending traumatized me I was just like, what happened? But I remember watching it the second time for the show and then doing research, and I just remember my mind was like blown. I was just like, what? This is insane. This is like art. So I really enjoyed Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, especially because that's one of his films that I've actually watched more than once. And then I think, Inglourious, I'm just going to call it Inglourious. I remember Brad Pitt's acting in that movie was insane. I think that could possibly be my favorite role for Brad Pitt. And also the start of that movie, I don't know if you remember the start, is where Christoph Waltz is that Nazi officer and he goes to the house.
There you go.
That scene was so long.
There you go.
But it was so perfect. It was like, I just remember watching it and thinking.
And the crazy thing about all of Quentin's films is that there's always a question mark
At the end.
Do you remember in Inglourious with Christoph, you said it is, where does he recognize the girl?
Yes.
And do you remember his line still? He still looks at it and he's like, and I don't know if you remember the threat that you felt with this character.
Cause he was scary.
He was staunch. He would just pull the gun and he's like, wait a minute. And then that he would kill you. Like,
but he would talk so nicely like about the fact that he's going to kill you.
Yeah. So it comes out. And I just remember like watching that scene and he's sitting there and he's like, there's a question that I want to ask you. That's it. The face is like frozen. But I forgot what the question was. And it just rolls on.
Yes. That possibly could be my favorite one. But Once Upon a Time in Hollywood also. Yeah. Those two are like, Pulp Fiction, I really enjoyed the first and third act. Second act, I was traumatized. Yeah. I was just like, how did we get you? Wait, what happened? Yeah. So for me, that's my cue so far. But Quentin Tarantino honestly is unlike any other film director. And he honestly makes movies that no one else makes. Like it's a Quentin Tarantino experience. Like there's no other film director out there like Quentin Tarantino.
Agreed. Yeah. I would definitely put him on the level of Spielberg.
No, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Steven Spielberg, though, makes more, like family-friendly films, if I could put it like that.
But even that for me, watching his film is an experience.
Yes.
There's just this, like, way that the film just slides.
I think my favorite Steven Spielberg is Ready Player One.
Yeah, we can't even go there.
I just remember Ready Player One. Spielberg. I was like, this is amazing. I just remember. Mm. And also the way he referenced popular culture in Ready Player One was beautiful. Yeah. But that's a discussion for another day. Because otherwise we'll continue for the next 50 minutes talking about.
In another show.
Steven Spielberg.
On another day. In the week.
Yeah. So this has been The Movie Show.
On Active FM.
Till next time.
See you then. All the choices you made, did you make them
again? Like what you're listening to? Of course you do.
Of course you do.
Follow us on all social media platforms and engage with us. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and YouTube.
This is Ready On Demand.
This is Ready On Demand.
What you want, when you want it. It's Active FM. To make the mark. Active FM, the Netflix of radio, but better.